Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
The crowd at the United Center for tip-off between the Bulls and the Timberwolves was embarrassingly small by any standard. If the trend continues, what will it take to revive interest or excitement in a Bulls franchise that risks falling off the map in Chicago without something major happening?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that is how change occurs, right? So I would imagine the next change is going to be fairly dramatic. I don't know how you solve what they're going through right now. What they've done is they've put together a really good team if you just dropped a superstar in the middle of it, right? That's all they're short.
Is that all they're missing?
Just get the best player in the league to come here and drop it. You know what? If Giannis would just drive in, it's not that far. He could drive it. He could be here by the afternoon.
Depends on if he's got wiper fluid or not.
Well, he'd need that wiper fluid. Did you see that guy accused us of being GN for recommending speed? I'm trying to help. I used a lot of wiper fluid on the
way
down.
Saving lives.
That's it.
Saving lives.
That's all we're trying to do. Make a long story boring. I don't know that there is an easy solution to what they're going through. I really don't. Because, again, just drop that player in and you're laughing. But they don't have that player. And I don't think they're going to develop that player. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, how old is Kobe? 19? Maybe he gets better in a few years and the guys they have still can hold on a little bit. But no, they're not there. They just aren't there. And I don't know that this group's going to get it done. So would that be trying to find a superstar, some dramatic move like that? It's difficult.
When the Bulls traded Jimmy Butler for the collection of players, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine, it was done with the intention of being that team that was well-rounded team that was going to play harder and be better and be the team aspect and sell that. That was your brand. And you were branding yourself as kind of the team without a superstar. We're going to find a way to get to the playoffs anyway. And that was sort of the Thibodeau approach, if you go back and Yeah, they had Derrick Rose, but they were combating the Heat's big three with a team that was deeper and better and played together better than any other team in the East.
That Detroit Pistons team, right?
Yeah, Prince team, that collection with Ben Wallace and those guys. But you know, the brand right now, the credibility gets worse every day in every game. And I think, you know, we laugh about the stuff that Stacey King, you know, pokes fun and mocks Jim Boylan comparing Luke Kornet to Robert Horry. Come on, people. Stop insulting our intelligence. But when Stacey King laughs at the head coach on the air, this is a guy who that diminishes the credibility of Jim Boylan a little bit at a time. And you have a branding problem if you're the Chicago Bulls. And you got to keep an eye on that because that was bad last night. At tip off, the pictures were embarrassing. And it's not going to get any better. As I said to Dustin before the show, where he pointed out to me, the Kings come to town next. Can you name 5 Sacramento Kings? Good luck doing that. So there's not going to be much of a reason to go out to the United Center to see your Chicago Bulls because you don't trust the coach. You don't like the team. They're not winning enough to matter. And the relevance is something that's slipping away every one game at a time. So you've got to do something. If you don't make a trade, you might have to change the coach. If you don't change the coach or make a trade, then you're going to see more crowds than you saw last night.
I could give you De'Aaron Fox, Marvin Bagley, Bogdanovich. I think that might be it. I think Three Kings is
Come
where
on,
I top
Kevbo,
out.
Come on, you're a Hoosier. How about Yogi Ferrell?
Oh, they have Yogi Ferrell?
Yeah.
Oh, they have Buddy Hield as well.
There we go.
Come on. Let's go.
Buddy's having a good year, actually. But I digress.
All right.
As far as the Bulls go, you know, the obvious answer here would be winning. That would revive interest, and that would probably get more people out to the United Center, would get more people involved and invested in this team, and the interest level would go up if you win. But that's too simple of a solution because they're so far from that. There are so many other steps they need to reach before they get to the point where they can win. You're going to see a game like last night, and you might see another one against Sacramento. They got Cleveland coming up. So these are games that they have been winning against really bad teams. They're over 500 against bad teams. And what was the stat yesterday, Dust? 1-18 versus teams over 500.
Oh,
so
gosh.
We kind of, if you see the opposing team's record, you kind of know what the result is going to be, like almost to a T. So winning is the easy answer, but you have to have progress before that. You have to have some sort of a hope. You have to have competence in your front office and in the head coach, and he is a laughingstock. And it's to the point now where you almost feel bad for him because he is such a punchline and nobody takes him seriously. And the kind of crazy BS he pulls during games and the stuff he says after games is not helping him whatsoever. I mean, listen, I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but how many head coaches is this front office going to be able to go through? There is nobody around with the tenure of John Paxson that has accomplished less in North American sports. He has been around forever, and he has not even reached one finals appearance, and he's had so many different bites at the apple. So once that happens, I think that will galvanize, depending on who the replacement will be, if that ever does happen, it would galvanize the fan base, but you have to start at the top and move down because it's rotten at the top.
Well, yeah, Kevin, you are correct. The instant answer is winning now, but there's no evidence that the Bulls can do that. We're like more than halfway through the season now. The Bulls haven't shown us they can do anything currently to win consistently, and they barely squeak out a win against the struggling Minnesota Timberwolves. It's really pathetic the way they're looking right now. So that's not realistic, but that's the only thing that's going to boost attendance, because there's the people that, you know, on this panel and the people currently listening to us right now on The Score who pay attention to all of the details, like the dumb things Jim Boylan says and things like that. But just to the casual fan that's going to attend because they want to have a good time and take their kids to do something fun, it's going to be winning. They're not paying attention to all the other noise, but all the other noise is important. But what's the realistic thing that can fix this team in order to get to win? It's going to be tank maybe and get a pick that's higher than a number 7 pick, because that's where the Bulls have been over the past few years. They've gotten stuck with the number 7 pick, and it's been basketball hell because you have not gotten a true superstar. And that's what the Bulls are lacking, as you point out, Mully. You drop in a superstar on this team, then you're talking about the playoff type of team that the front office and everyone was talking about before the season. So you need a superstar. The other way you could do that is a trade somehow, some way, but that's not instant either. You trade Zach LaVine, you get some sort of draft picks for the future or something, but none of this is a fix now scenario for the Bulls. It's really bad.
The live in-person experience at the United Center is still good. It's still once you're there, but the it's how do you get like non-season ticket holders to show up? How do you get people to go just drive down there and get tickets at the gate or buy tickets on their phone? Right, that's the problem. You need that superstar, and they've been middling in the lottery. That's not how you get it done. Okay, and the other, you know, as much as we all know that Jim Boylan is not going to be the coach probably the next time the Bulls are in the postseason,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you were to get rid of him right now, like even
Friday,
let's say All-Star break, during
okay.
the All-Star break,
yep.
you know, what name, who's out there, who would get you excited like today? Are you now going to buy tickets or show up at the United Center because of a coach? There's only one person that's feasible that I could see that would like get me riled up or get me excited, and that would be who I've said many times who I want to see.
John Paxson.
Yeah. I want to see John Paxson come out of that box and
Doug
coach
Collins.
That team. Doug probably too,
yeah.
but I don't know. I don't know if Doug can. But that's it. I mean, right now. I mean, there's an offseason to figure all that out. But right this second, they're in a really tough spot.
It's a great question.
Michael Kopech shaved his head for charity and talked about the perspective he gained during the time he missed from Tommy John surgery. How hard will it be for the Sox to balance Kopech's gung-ho attitude with the need to proceed carefully? And will he open the season with the team? If so, what is his spot in the rotation?
Did you see the hair he cut off?
I got to tell you.
Did you see the flowing mane?
He looked like a different guy. I did not recognize him.
He looked like a movie star with that golden hair flowing there, Kevin. You had to like that. I mean, come on. He gets
been,
there.
Look at him. He's been dyeing his hair trying to get it since we've known him.
A great big empty hole in my stomach once I saw the picture of all of those shorn
Did you
locks.
Recognize him?
No.
A whole it's box of shocking.
So I give him a ton of credit for doing that. A young kid, a professional athlete, that could not have been an easy decision, but he did it for the right reasons. Every time that he talks, the more you hear from Michael Kopech, the more you like. This is going to be an easy guy to embrace for Sox fans, for Cubs fans, for baseball fans, because if you're a sports fan, you appreciate the kind of perspective that Michael Kopech sounds like he has and he possesses, and maybe he gained from going through this early in his career. It's going to be very difficult because of a guy as convincing as he is, as impressive as he is, on and off the mound, to kind of say, whoa, 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 Coop, don't rush him back. I'm going to find myself checking, you know, the sort of enthusiasm, like, okay, you want to see what you're going to see in Arizona. You want to see that as soon as possible. But I think we referenced it in the Zion Williamson example. You've got to have the long view here. You've got to say, all right, well, you know what? January 23rd in the NBA season doesn't mean anything in the context of Zion Williams' development. And likewise, maybe it doesn't matter if you have Michael Kopech in April, or maybe if you delay his debut until whenever he is ready. Now, if he's ready in April, great. But I wonder about that just because of the timetable. So I don't know that I would say he's going to open the season with the White Sox. I thought that maybe at the beginning of the offseason. But take it slow. Take the long view, because this is a guy you want pitching for a long time on the South Side.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. I think that his gung-ho mentality cannot be something that Don Cooper embraces beyond being pleased to see him want to, right?
Right.
Because you don't want to get to a situation. Let's say the White Sox are actually pretty good this year. You don't want to get to a situation where at the end of the year, well, you know what? We're going to sit him down. We can't. That's
innings
his
limit.
Last start.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what you worry about a little bit with guys, especially guys coming off of arm injuries, especially young pitchers who haven't put together seasons like that. It's not, you know, it would be nonsensical to bring Michael Kopech in and try to get him 200 innings. That's crazy. Who didn't Washington do that with Strasburg? They got to the play. They're making a playoff run, and they had to shut him down.
They shut him down. Yeah,
and it was the right move to make because he was the future of their franchise, and they felt they were eventually going to win a World Series, and he would be a part of it. And guess what? They won a World Series.
And it's a big reason why he re-signed with them, the way that they treated him early in his career.
Right. So I think you have a real asset here. You got a guy that is so gung-ho. He's, you know, he can throw the ball 100 miles an hour. He's going to try to do that every time he pitches. You got to concentrate on turning him into a pitcher, on using his stuff the best way, and not overusing him in any way. So I think that, you know, Sox are in an interesting position because they do have five starters. They do have guys that, you know, they had to roll out how many, seven or eight pitchers last year to try to take up that spot. And now they've got guys, and they got a guy like this that they can take their time with and hopefully work him in. You know, I mean, Dylan Cease isn't ready to throw an entire season of baseball. We're going to talk to Coop. I want to talk to Coop.
We'll see, though. I think he's more ready.
I'm just saying you got to be smart about these young guys. You know, Carlos Rodon is actually going to come back at some point this season. No one wants to hear it.
Allegedly.
Probably after the All-Star break. I don't know. But when he comes back, you got to be careful with him, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is a balancing act for the White Sox. I think they know it. I think that's why they went out and got two starting pitchers, not one. And I'm very excited to see Kopech, but I also want to, you know, take a log off the fire for him.
Well, regarding the hair, first and foremost, let's just address the most important issue at hand here. It was a little bit crushing to see all of the mane of Michael Kopech.
It's amazing.
But it was for a really good cause, and he's raising money for charity, and you know, he's involved with charitable things and in the community, which is what you like to see. You know, Tim Anderson set a really good example last year by being really active in community efforts and connecting with charities and kids and things like that. I think that's something that even the most bitter White Sox hater, like the guy that sits next to me, can get behind. Hopefully, we can all agree on that. They're doing nice things. As far as him on the field, you know, I would love to see him start 35 games, throw 240 innings, be that workhorse that he is capable of being. He's a big, strong guy. He's still going to throw really hard. He's still going to have nasty stuff. But I do have to train myself to be patient and look toward the long view. I think the Strasburg comparison is, while not a perfect one, it's definitely something you can refer back to. He was shut down in 2012 after 159 innings. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, 30 starts, 34 starts, 24 starts, 34. So he's been fairly durable since then. And it did pay off because he was spectacular in the World Series. It was way down the line. They probably didn't think it would be that much further down after the shutdown, but it did pay off in the end. So I don't think.
No, Michael Kopech is not Steven Strasburg.
No, right.
He's more Robert Horry.
It's not a perfect comparison, but it's one that we can definitely hark back to. And he does remind me of a young Robert Horry. I think he will not open the season with the team. They will bring him along more slowly. Not that the games don't count for just as much in April and March as they're going to in August and September, but I think you'd rather have him available in September than you would in March. And I think the organization will probably see it the same way.
Michael Kopech, 3 o'clock today with McNeil and Parkins.
All right.
Awesome.
Nice.
Great to hear Danny yesterday. Good to have him back and all the best to him. And
definitely.
Owen.
So it's awesome to see, you know, that Michael Kopech is sounding like he's feeling good and that he has the gung-ho approach and he's hungry to get back. You love to see that. But, I mean, if we're going to play this comparison game, since we're just throwing names around, what you don't want is Michael Kopech to be Derrick Rose. So don't rush him back.
Oh, Ray.
This is exactly why it's not going to be that difficult for the White Sox to take a cautious approach, even though Michael Kopech is eager to get back. There's no reason to rush him. You've bolstered the starting rotation. Just take your time. That's okay. So I don't think we're going to see Michael Kopech involved on opening day, and that is okay. We will see him soon enough.
Yeah, I don't know how you can be a fan of sports and a fan of Chicago sports and not get behind a guy like Michael Kopech. I mean, he says all the right things. He seems to he's growing up a ton in front of us, right? I mean, since he's been part of the Sox, you were a little bit worried maybe about him in the beginning, but he seems to be doing all the right things and saying all the right things. Like you, Mully, I'm excited to hear what Coop thinks about him tomorrow at 8:30. That's when Coop will be on with you guys. That'll be fun to hear from Coop. He's got an unbelievable, different-looking staff this year, right? That's going to be a lot of fun. I would hope that he's here opening day. I get you have to monitor innings and things like that, but I hope he gets it. That might curb the enthusiasm, no pun intended, if he wasn't with the big league club right from the start. Right, I mean, there's a lot of anticipation, a lot of hope.
I don't think so. I think there's so much. There's so many other things to get excited about from a Sox fan perspective.
You just don't want any negatives, okay? And that to me, that would be going in him not starting up here at 35th and Shields would be something going in the wrong direction.
Oh, I don't believe that. If he
it's the first year of the window, you have to look ahead and not completely blow.
I want it now. Oh,
right. I know, but what if they say we want him to be ready in October? That's why we're delaying his debut. See, Dustin.
See what you did there?
Yeah,
that's a good question.
In a story about the top 10 underperforming units in 2019 from the NFL's website, Bears quarterbacks were listed ninth. Will there be a significant improvement in 2020? And what did you make of Von Miller's assessment of Mitchell Trubisky as, quote, definitely not bad?
That was on a podcast, I think. He was on the, I can't think of the name of the podcast, but he was on a podcast. He somehow wound up breaking down Mitch, and he talked about him. You know, he's seen really bad quarterbacks, and he basically said it's going to take him more time, and he said that he was definitely not bad. So that I thought that was hysterical, but I think that the underperforming units was on the NFL website. It was from their analytics department, and the idea was that they can't throw a ball down the field. And Mitch was the numbers were so god awful in the attempts down the field that it was very difficult to understand how bad that team is, and it kind of explained the reason they can't score points. They can't get the ball down the field. So Mitch was the only guy mentioned. The unit was the quarterbacks, but hopefully the unit is significantly better in the offseason. They're going to have to add some people to the room. They've kind of made that apparent. Pardon my take.
Yeah, pardon my take podcast.
That's right.
They keep adding people to the room. How big is this room? I mean, how many different play collectors and minds and quarterback,
you know what,
and
though?
Mitch whisperers
I told you
are going to bring in?
The play collector is Matt Nagy. Yeah. That's what he wants to do. He wants everybody to contribute plays and then put together the game plan and all that. They've got a lot of people that are maybe better than people they had. They got a lot of people. They got a lot of things that are coming in. You know, I don't know. I don't know how the room was operating before.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just saying in terms of how they collected their plays and what they did. I like the idea that they have experienced play callers, because maybe you'll help get some rhythm into that game plan instead of thinking that you're going to score a touchdown on every play. But I think it's all connected, the coaching and the player. They're sticking with Mitch, but they've got to upgrade the room. In other words, I'm talking about the quarterbacks. They need to bring in, and hopefully they will, somebody where if it doesn't go well in the first three or four games of the year, you have an option, not Chase Daniel.
They can renovate the room. I still worry about the architect, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously it matters who's in there with Mitch Trubisky, in addition to Mitch Trubisky, if he's going to be in there. You know, Von Miller, yeah. I mean, he goes on a podcast, Mitch Trubisky comes up, and it's like, there's Mitch, so cute. He can overthrow some receivers. Oh, this is such a nice little boy. Come on. I mean,
it's an insult?
Kind of, isn't it?
He's being diplomatic.
I mean, I guess
he didn't want to be a total
diplomatic
jerk.
He didn't
want to
be a jerk. But I wouldn't overreact to the fact that Von Miller says Mitch Trubisky's a great quarterback. So, okay. Nothing to see here.
He didn't call him great. He called him.
He did.
He called him definitely not bad.
Mitch is a great quarterback. He's their franchise quarterback. You've got to not let him scramble and not let him complete passes. He can do a little bit of everything. He's going to be great.
Definitely not bad.
Panderer, Von Miller, great pass rusher, but he's a panderer.
He did a good job of winning that game.
He did.
Right,
that's the only lasting memory that he had of Mitch Trubisky. It was that last drive. Sure. Maybe he thinks Eddie Pinheiro is a great kicker now too. Because
oh, he
that
is.
Was the last
He's fixed.
Thing that
He's fixed. Come on, Kevbo. That's
he
not a problem.
11 in a row.
11 in a row.
Fixed.
Come
like
on. We trust
dog,
him on
maybe.
Fourth and nine.
You know, Von Miller might have a career in politics when it's all said and done, talking out both sides of his mouth like this. I mean, Mitch Trubisky definitely not bad. Get
definitely
real.
Not bad. Okay, as for a significant improvement in the room, let's talk after free agency and the NFL draft. That's the only time you're going to know if this is getting better.
It's got to get better because it can't get worse.
It can, and it might. I think relative to the average human being, Mitchell Trubisky's definitely not bad as a quarterback. But in the grand scheme of things in pro football, he is probably he's a NFL player. He's probably a backup. But he's not a starter. Definitely not bad. Von Miller, you are a polite man. Congratulations to you.
Well, addressing the question of significant improvement for 2020. All right, so you talk about Matt Nagy being the play collector. You have to hope John DeFilippo is the Trubisky whisperer and that he really can get in here and get in Mitch's head and help him. A. B. It's you have to, as Mully, you pointed out, you have to add to the quarterback room. You absolutely have to. This is not an option to go again with Chase Daniel as your backup quarterback, as your QB2. You have to have someone who can step in if this thing isn't going to work out, because you're wasting a good defense. I mean, we're wasting time here. We're wasting Khalil Mack time here. because I don't expect him to have a down year again like he did last season. This is just a waste of everybody's time if you don't bring someone in that can take over for Trubisky if he can't put it together next season. And in terms of what Von Miller said, he did say Trubisky has good spurts. Yes, he has had good spurts. That is correct. But yeah, and Trubisky's not bad. He's not Nathan Peterman bad. That is true. But he's not good either.
There's so much here, and we have so little time during this 5 at 5 segment. But we have 3 more hours. So that's the good news. The room can't get much worse than it was, right? It can only really go upwards. I'm glad Nagy had the onions to bring in guys that actually could replace him and call plays better than him. I now know that Von Miller will not be a NFL player personnel guy in his retirement. Not that he's going to need to work after all the hundreds of millions he will earn chasing quarterbacks around. But the real question that this question now brings up is, I need a name. No kidding. Thank you. I know they need a backup quarterback. I need a name.
They got a backup. They need
Derek
a starting,
Carr.
They need
Derek
a starting
Carr.
Quarterback.
Okay, I'm saying, who's willing to come in and, air quote, tutor and sit behind Mitch? That's the question.
That's a great question.
Thank you, David.
A Westwood Radio Super Bowl promo here on The Score. Build the big game as Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs against Nick Bosa and the 49ers. Is Bosa the 49ers' biggest marquee player, and can a team win the Super Bowl without a superstar on offense?
We're going to find out, because I'm not sure there is a superstar on the 49er offense. If you're talking about pure marquee, style over substance, sizzle over steak, I guess it's Jimmy Garoppolo. He is the guy who is the cover boy on that team. So if you want to say Mahomes versus Jimmy G, yeah, that might get more people watching and turning their heads and more eyeballs, but it's not accurate. When you talk about the best player on the 49ers, that is difficult, because they have, it's going to be a defensive lineman. It's going to be, or you're going to say probably the most accomplished guy could be Richard Sherman. It's going to be a cornerback that's going to be picked on a little bit. So I love this sort of contrast in styles, as we talked about this week and we continue to discuss. Can a team win a Super Bowl without a superstar on offense? Boy, if that's the case, I think you're going to see a subtle shift in maybe emphasis in the NFL that defense can still win championships.
I think it's interesting, because we talked about it yesterday. George Kittle was named the not a good player, but the absolutely highest rated offensive player according to Pro Football Focus, and a lot of people really embrace what Pro Football Focus does, and I think there's an element of it that's great. But you can't really say it's Mahomes against George Kittle, because you can't really say it's Mahomes against Jimmy G-string. Who's going to tune in and watch that? I mean, that seems fairly lopsided. So I think Nick Bosa is a good selection because he's representative of that great number one draft pick, 5 number one draft pick defensive line that's going to be coming after Mahomes. So the game really is Mahomes against the world, Mahomes against history. That is what the game should be billed as. It's Patrick Mahomes, and everybody tune in. But they got a defensive line that's going to come after him. So I kind of like the promo. I have no problem with choosing Nick Bosa. I think that he is a really good pass rusher. He is a very relentless player, and that is the only way that San Francisco is going to win, if that defensive line, if that pass rush can get to Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. It's about Patrick Mahomes. He is the draw. He is the guy right now in the NFL. He's the superstar. He's the best player. And I think, promo-wise, lining him up against perhaps the best defensive player in Nick Bosa, who's another guy who's 22 years old. He's got all the potential and star quality in the world as well. He's going to be around for a long time. He's going to be a superstar in this league eventually. And, as far as offensive players on the Niners, I think George Kittle, maybe not a superstar because he's still relatively in the infancy of his career, but, I mean, he's had superstar moments. He's put up the numbers. He had that huge run against the Saints earlier in the regular season where he's just battering guys over left and right. That was kind of a coming out party for Kittle. So I think he is a superstar on offense in this game.
Yeah, Bosa is the marquee player, but George Kittle is certainly making a name for himself. But it's definitely Bosa who is the marquee player for the 49ers. Can a team win without a superstar on offense? Not against the Chiefs. I don't think so. I think it's going to be the Chiefs that win this Super Bowl.
Is Bosa the 49ers' marquee player? Absolutely. Jimmy G is just sizzle, no steak. And can a team win a Super Bowl without a superstar on offense? Absolutely not. I will give my official pick now. Chiefs.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
Eli Manning will announce his retirement today. Is he a Hall of Famer?
This is tough. I think on the surface of it, you think, oh, the guy's got two Super Bowls, and he's got an 8-4 record in the playoffs, and he's won big games, and he's been the MVP of both the Super Bowl victories. So, conversation over. However, he is 117-117 over the course of his regular season career. Eli Manning has been on some bad teams and has been the cause of some bad teams. He's been mediocre in some years. You know, when you say Hall of Fame or not, you should have an immediate reaction. It should be yes. It shouldn't be, well, yeah, but I struggle with this one because I think you can make a really good case for Hall of Fame, and I honestly believe you can make a great case against Hall of Fame. And the case against Hall of Fame, I don't know who said it, but if you are not the best player at your position over the course of a number of years, then you can't be. When we sat there and we picked out Hall of Famers, best quarterback in the league, how many guys were you rattling off, and how many years of this 16 years where Eli wasn't in the top five? You didn't even think about, Eli Manning. Because his great skill was winning. I think Eli Manning will get in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure that he is one.
The irony is that this conversation, it would have been more convincing and easier to probably make the argument for him probably if he'd retired 2 or 3 years ago.
Absolutely correct.
Because the final couple seasons of Eli Manning affected that record. So it was 500 when he finished, and he leaves everybody with a bad impression of a guy that was overmatched and you know was inaccurate and threw too many interceptions. But I look at the overall body of work. It's difficult for me not to say he's a Hall of Famer because two-time Super Bowl champion. He was also the MVP in those games. He's seventh in NFL history in passing yards, seventh with NFL history with touchdown passes. And he made 210 straight starts. I think in that market, the New York market, being durable, being available, being professional – that all works in his favor. I know what you're saying about being the best in his position. He never was that guy, but I think he was the model of consistency. And if I had to vote for yes or no Eli Manning Hall of Fame, I would say yes.
I would say yes as well. It's easy for me. I mean, not only did he win the two Super Bowls, but look at who he beat in those two Super Bowls. Nobody had more success against Bill Belichick than Eli Manning. Came up with the biggest spots. Made all the good throws in the biggest moments. This is a no-brainer Hall of Famer for me.
Two-time Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP makes him a Hall of Famer, but in terms of greatest of all time conversation or greatest quarterback of his era, not even a blip on the radar.
Not even the greatest Manning.
I mean, on top of the stats you guys mentioned, also seventh all-time in passing yards,
yep.
Seventh all-time in TDs, Walter Payton Man of the Year, never missed a game due to an injury, 13-time captain, and I would bet money that by this time next year, he will have finished his first year working for the four-letter network talking about football on television. And being in New York, 5 years from now, he's going into the Hall of Fame.
All right, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.